So as last week, we'll take some questions which are presented here by Sri Jai Krishna Prabhu. The first one, in the Srimad Bhagavatam, we have Sutta speaking, Shukadev speaking. How is it possible that Vyasadeva wrote the Bhagavatam before these conversations were made? Well, the answer is that he wrote it. What we have as Bhagavatam now is written after Sutta and Shukadev spoke. Vyasadeva appears within the Bhagavatam, and he spoke to Shukadev, and Shukadev spoke, Sutta Vaita spoke, and then after all that was over, Vyasadeva compiled the Bhagavatam as we have it now. Why didn't he ask any apologies for misguiding people? This refers to Vyasadeva. Why not now, if he is still in Bhadrikashram? He's living there still now. Yeah, we find in the fourth chapter, isn't it, of the first canto of Bhagavatam, that Narad, he rebukes Vyasadeva for misguiding people by giving scriptures that don't directly describe the glories of Bhagavan Hari. So he's actually misguiding people. Narad says that, and it's true, but it's only one perspective. Because for some people, they can only be misguided. So it's a question of the best way to misguide them. Krishna says, Savadhaman parityajama mekam sharanam vraja. Just give up all varieties of so-called religion and just take shelter in me, surrender to me. This is the only proper advice for every conditioned soul. However, almost all of them are too sinful to accept that. So therefore, in the Vedic literature, there are many different prescriptions given for people at varying levels of consciousness so that they won't go into gross or lower standards of activity and consciousness than they are presently at, and so that they will have faith in the Vedic injunctions, so that at some point they'll be ready to, or they'll be more prepared to accept the best of all Vedic injunctions, which is given Mame Kam Sharanam Braja in Bhagavad Gita and in Srimad Bhagavatam. So it's misguiding because people, they want to be cheated. Because people are very foolish, the Vedic literature actually caters to people's foolishness. But it simultaneously presents the highest truth for those who are honest enough to accept it. So it's written here that Vyasadeva, he is the cause of all spiritual misunderstanding. But actually the cause of misunderstanding is the perverted desire of the jivas not to surrender to Krishna, and therefore their propensity to misunderstand. Even if we tell the direct truth, most people don't accept it or they misunderstand it. They may become actually very angry about it. So in Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, verse 16, Lord Krishna speaks, said, eternal there is no change. He's actually referring to the jiva here, not to himself, but anyway. And he's in chapter 7, verse 4, he talks about my separated material energies. So how come the changeless one has separated energies, and what is the meaning of changeless? Yeah, so Krishna, or the Supreme, is eternal and changeless. This is one of the characteristics of the Supreme. So this is a very important point to understand exactly what this means. Shankaracharya interprets this to mean that no change means there's no activity, which means no personality, which means no thing, nothing. And that therefore the Supreme is totally undifferentiated. Nirvishesh is the Sanskrit word. But the Vaishnava Acharyas have refuted this position. Particularly, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has taught the Shakti Parinamavada that his energies, the transformation is perceived within his energies, but his own personal nature is unchanging. His the Supreme, who is Sarva Shaktiman, or all powerful, has many energies which are simultaneously different and non-different from him. They're not different from him because they are inseparable from him. But at the same time, the various activities that go on within his energies do not affect him. He is transcendental to his energies. This is simply practical. If we accept that there is a source of all energies, which is only sane to do so, that there is God, there is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, then it means he's also in charge of his energies. It doesn't mean he's affected or contaminated by his energies. So Krishna is Krishna is Krishna. He is unchangeable. He doesn't go through the various phases of growth, birth, growth, remaining for some time, production of byproducts, dwindling and death. Krishna doesn't undergo these changes. For the sake of his transcendental pastimes, he appears to be born, he appears to be a young child, and he appears to be a youth, although he doesn't age beyond this, because he's not under the aegis of his of the time factor. He is not subject to any material change, and the whatever appears to be a change within, that's within Krishna's spiritual nature, which is only enacted for the sake of pastimes. Then question number 4. I'm just going over these briefly because there are a lot of questions. In some places in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna advised Arjuna to think about God instead of him. Why? Well, because he is God. So just to make the point that you should think of me, through Arjuna he's instructing the whole world. Sometimes he says you should think of God. If you happen to think of Krishna as just some prince or some human being, then why should you think of him? But because he is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, therefore he's to be offered all respect. Just like I'm sitting on this seat here now, and someone might be making a disturbance, and I might say, well, you should respect the person who's sitting on the seat. Well, that happens to be me, but I'm not saying you should offer respect to me just because I'm me, but because there's a certain etiquette to be followed. So Krishna says that you should offer respect to Bhagavan, because by doing that is the proper thing to do, and by doing so you will also be benefited in the best possible way. And that Bhagavan is Krishna. So this is a question, the next one is a question which next to the question is written DK. Everyone in Tamil Nadu knows what DK means. It means from the atheist. So the first statement is that the Pandavas were not at all pure devotees. DK Uvacha. That's what they say, but why should we accept what you say? The Pandavas are described by Vyasadeva and all great acharyas who all accept them as pure devotees, and why should we believe in you, you rascal? If you accept that the Pandavas exist, then you have to accept, first of all, if you say the Pandavas weren't pure devotees, that means you accept that the Pandavas exist. And then you have to accept Shastra, because the Pandavas are described in Shastra. So then accept everything in Shastra. What kind of devotional service did they do? The whole Mahabharata didn't say any word about their devotional service. Excuse me, Mr. Atheist, but you're not qualified to speak on these subjects. You don't know what you're talking about. It's just like, you know, some dam is built, and you say, well, this dam was built by such and such. Here's the engineer. The dam. The dam, The dam was built by, and the name is given, the engineer. And someone may come process and say, what did he do? He just made a few drawings and came and inspected the site. He wasn't working hard on the site, lifting up all the different things and putting them in place. You don't. Someone who's foolish may say like that. He doesn't understand the importance of the engineer. Without the engineer, there's no dam. There's someone with no knowledge, no attempt at understanding anything, simply comes in with a critical attitude and wants to make a judgment. I mean, why should you accept the judgment of such a person? Everything the Pandavas did was devotional service, but you can't understand bhakti because you haven't accepted the training in it. And then the next accusation, Indra is basically a woman hunter and he didn't know what etiquette is. Well, actually, I mean, it's the same answer for all these accusations. On the one hand, you say you don't believe in all these gods. On the other hand, you say Indra is a woman hunter. Well, then that means you do believe in him. Otherwise, how could it be anything? Actually, Indra is a very pious person. You don't get the position of Indra without being very pious. And the mistakes that he's made, they are given in Shastra too, for didactic reasons. That means didactic means to give us some good lesson. To show that even if someone is very pious, they can still make mistakes. Therefore, we have to be careful. But you're saying Indra doesn't know any etiquette, but you don't know any etiquette. It's just, you know, a respectable person is to be respected, and it's not the job of the junior to correct him. You say this god is ready to kill even a good demon for this worthless Indra. There's no such thing as a good demon. It's just like, you know, all the thieves, the police come in and raid them, and they start cursing the police. You know, we were just peacefully sitting here. We weren't doing anything wrong, you know. I mean, of course, we raided so many houses, but when they came, we weren't doing anything, and they came and arrested us. You know, who are these rascal police? So the demons, even if they are apparently moral, they are far more disturbing elements in society than, well, they are just by their nature disturbing elements in society, because they don't accept the supremacy of Vishnu, and therefore they put so many obstacles in the path of spiritual progress. Indra has a service to do on behalf of Vishnu, of an administrative function within the universe, and the demons are always trying to disturb them. And then there's talking about Vali. If there was friendship with Vali, then there was no bridge or war would have been required. Vali could have killed Ravana by himself. Well, for that matter, Ram can kill Ravana by himself. Hanuman can kill him by himself. Again, you're talking superficially without any understanding of the deeper aspects. Why all these things?